Well, my name is Amy Guerin, and I am I've gone through a lot of titles. My current title is a conversational media consultant. A lot of what I do is I help media organizations and other types of organizations figure out how to participate well in the part of the public conversation that happens online. And by participate, I mean both actively speak up and say things that don't end up sounding really stupid, and also that that help them keep an eye on what's happening in the public conversation that might be useful to, say, how a journalist covers a beat, or how a nonprofit monitors a human rights issue, or things along those lines. And my background is I went to J School, I went to Temple University, and was a journalist and editor and managing editor, mostly covering energy, environment, business, and technology issues, mostly for business magazines. And then I worked for a kind of think tank for the energy industry called eSource. I was the managing editor there. And then I realized that I'm a really bad employee, and I went freelance in 1997, and then in 1998, out of sheer frustration with the fact that everybody was talking, I was excited about the internet, I thought it's great, I'd been on it for a few years, and everybody's talking about design, marketing, programming, and nobody's talking about the content. So out of sheer frustration, I put this site up in April 1998 at the domain contentious.com, which is basically a blog, except I coded everything by hand, with a couple of articles just about, you know, how awful a lot of online content was and how people could do things better. And it really took off. It was right time, right place. I got quite a bit of attention for that. And ever since then, I've been doing all sorts of work almost exclusively in online media. Anything about content in online media, from e-learning to email newsletters to discussion forums to blogs, you name it, I've got my hands all over it. So I have the two blogs, my two main blogs now are contentious.com. I have writeconversation.com, which focuses on conversational media. And I also edit the the Poynter Institute's group web blog, eMedia Tidbits.
And so your focus, you're saying the main thing is content. What is quality content for journalistic points of view, of course?
Well, there's no such thing as one kind of journalistic content. I mean, journalistic content can have interviews, it can have fact sheets, it can have analysis, it can even include commentary. I mean, the op-ed pages have always been a mainstay of every single newspaper that's out there. So when you're talking about journalistic content, it's not just one kind of thing. But what makes quality content in terms of informational content, I think it's pretty much the same across all media. You need to have some confidence that the people or organization who are publishing the information are basically not lying to you, or that they're not being stupid, that they are gathering information in reliable ways and doing their best to present it accurately and to present their own, to be transparent about their methods. And on that front, I think some mainstream news organizations do a lot better than others, and I think some online venues do a lot better than others. So to me, you know, content then comes down to, you know, transparency, accuracy, and, you know, I think that's probably the two main ones, if we had to boil it down, transparency and accuracy.
Yeah, yeah. And tell me a little bit, what do you mean with accuracy, and how, you know, even if you are not mean-spirited, but you know, it happens that you make mistakes and you're not accurate. How can we be accurate?
Okay, well, accuracy, a lot of it comes down to, are you getting the information from a primary source, and can you corroborate that information in any particular way? The importance of corroboration varies with the type of fact you're trying to cite. Like if somebody says they're 40 years old, you know, in a lot of cases you wouldn't necessarily need to corroborate that, but in some cases you might. So you might want to go and check the public records. But what I've found is a lot of people, and surprisingly a lot of mainstream journalists, it's not just online people, you don't go to the trouble to track down the primary sources. Like what bugs me is when I'll see a newspaper that will just quote another story when they could have easily consulted the primary source and gotten that quote themselves or verified that themselves. So, you know, for me, in everything I do, you know, if it's a fact that matters, it's crucial to the story, I will always try to track down the primary source. And the nice thing about the way the internet works these days, that's not that hard. You know, especially since so many of your sources are publishing their own blogs or websites, and you can see what they have to say about a particular issue. So I find that very helpful. But also with accuracy, a lot of it comes down to common sense. Okay, so you're quoting a source correctly, and they tell you that this, you know, this statistic is 25%, but if that makes no sense to you, okay, don't just blindly quote what they said. Go and check that out. So it takes putting your crap detector on and always keeping your head about you when you're taking down information. It also means little details like being accurate about the spelling of names. That's surprisingly important, and it's only gotten more so in terms of online media. Spelling URLs correctly, linking directly to the specific page where information can be found rather than just linking to the main URL, the main domain for a site. Things like if you have source material that's relevant and it's a public document that you can share it, or it's copyrighted material that you have permission to share, put it online or link to it. You know, don't just expect your audience to take their word for you, your word for it. And that's something that actually I've had a go around with a few news organizations about lately, who think that external links somehow damage their credibility. I actually am of the opinion that if you have the opportunity to present a relevant, significant link in a story and you don't present it, you are undermining your credibility. My two cents on that.
But how do you see this? Now, people feel, both mainstream and you know, new media journalists, now we have to constantly put things online and we have to keep it up. And so you have less and less time to be accurate and to fact check everything. So how do you see this trade-off between meeting deadlines or being up to speed and being accurate?
I actually see the opposite issue, because the thing is, with online stories, you have the ability to update them, and you also have no space constraints or time constraints. So, for instance, if you could say, we got this information from this source, but we haven't yet corroborated it, okay, online you have the space to say that, and then you can update that later clearly right where the original statement was. So any inbound links to your story will show the update. In mainstream media, you know, where you got to go to a press deadline or you got to go to airtime, that's when I think more of those kinds of mistakes can happen, because you don't have the opportunity to spell out specifically what the status is of these facts that you're giving. You know, how far you've gotten with verifying them. People just kind of have to take your word that since you're, I don't know, writing for the New York Times or broadcasting for ABC News, that you know what you're talking about. That, you know, they basically don't take as much time to verify facts in mainstream media as you think they would, and I think there's actually more opportunity to do that online. And this is something that wire services have done for decades. If you ever watch stories coming in from the AP wire or the Reuters wire or anything like that, they are constantly doing updates, and they will occasionally do notations that if they haven't corroborated an important piece of information yet, because that kind of thing is important to editors' decisions.
And what happens when journalists and citizen journalists make mistakes? What do you think is a good practice to correct those mistakes?
First of all, admit it right away. Be very prompt about it, because promptness counts online. And go right back to where you originally posted the story and mention the correction. I would do it in two places, at the top of the story and also right where the mistake occurred, like if you misquoted somebody or if you got a number wrong or something like that, or if new information came up which puts your old information into an important new context. So you would say something like update or addition or correction. But I think it's important to do it in both places, because first you want it to be right where, in the body of the story, right where the original mistake was. You don't want to just delete it and pretend it never happened. You want to leave a historical record there, because believe me, if you just try to delete it and act like your mistake never happened, somebody's got a copy of it somewhere, and that's going to come back to haunt you. The only time I would actually literally go back and delete content is if I posted something online that ended up being some serious kind of transgression, like if I was working for a company and I ended up putting information about financials online that I shouldn't have, or if I put something up about a domestic violence case that ended up compromising somebody's safety. You know, I would take that stuff down. But the thing is that you got to realize once you put something online, it is out there, and you can never pull it all back. It goes out on feeds. It's sitting in people's feed reader. Google is crawling the web. It's going to grab a copy of it and cache that. There's the Internet Archive at archive.org might grab a copy of it. So you have to assume that once you put something online, you can never take it back completely. You have to assume that somebody has a record of it somewhere. So don't pretend it didn't happen. Fess up, say you made a mistake, say what the nature of the mistake was, and give a correction or an explanation. Be as transparent about it as you can. And again, this is something where I think news organizations, mainstream news organizations, can learn from a lot of online media, because the way corrections get handled in print media and especially in broadcast are not directly connected to the original story. And I think it's very difficult for people to realize that there are corrections or updates. Like I said, it's something I've written about, and people have a variety of opinions on it. And, you know, the thing is, what you're getting here is just my opinion on how I would handle things. Other people come up with it differently. I respect other people's views about how they handle that. I just try to understand especially when it comes to correcting errors or making updates, I try to understand what their approach is, because that helps me put their content into context. Mm-hmm. You know, if I know that it's a place that tends to delete postings that they're embarrassed about later, it's like, well, okay, I'll take that into consideration when I read them. Mm-hmm.
And do you have in mind any examples of things that happen when mainstream media online, they made some major mistakes and they got caught by citizen journalists?
Well, you know, the funny thing is that it's we keep saying citizen journalists as if it's a specific discipline, you know, as if like we all kind of have to be members of the same club or something. And in fact, journalism is not so much a role as a collection of activities and a collection of skills. And those skills can either be bundled into what we consider a journalist, you know, professional journalist working full-time in a newsroom, a freelance journalist doing stories and also doing other kinds of work, a citizen journalist who's actually going out and doing news reporting, or it could be done collectively and collaboratively by a community. And that is exactly what happened in the case with Dan Rather. Everybody remembers that. And a lot of people say, oh, it was the bloggers who brought Dan Rather down. No, I traced that back. You know where that started? It started in the discussion forum. It started with people asking questions in a discussion forum. It started with a conversation. This is one of the reasons why I'm so into conversational media now, because conversations end up being the core of a lot of good news stories, because good journalism starts with asking good questions. And a lot of times, forums are where the good questions come up, and then after the discussion gels to a certain point, then somebody will do a blog posting about it, or somebody will post an article to a citizen journalism venue like Your Hub or something like that. But a lot of times, the kernel of it, the kernel of the investigation and the inquiry starts in forums. So I think it's very important to know how to participate in forums, to know how to participate in comment threads that happen on weblogs, and to keep an eye on those things, because that's the core skill. It comes down to people asking questions and trying to get answers.
So I found really interesting that post you wrote about, it's not that recent, but I think it's very interesting, what bloggers and journalists can learn from each other.
Yeah, I think I did that like last May or something.
Yeah,
like that.
So if there is anything you would like to share about that. We cover fact-checking. How about this? People like to distinguish fact from opinion.
Now, here's the thing. I see this a lot of times in weblogs and in citizen journalism from people who are in professional fields, you know, attorneys or engineers or something like that. In those sorts of professions, people are always want to sound either very certain or they want to hedge everything. Scientists are notorious for wanting to hedge everything. Lawyers are notorious for wanting to sound absolutely certain about everything. And so they use language that in some ways can misrepresent the information, because they're trying to convey a tone that's considered authoritative in their field, but might not work beyond that narrow audience. You know, for instance, it's like a lawyer would have a really difficult time saying in a weblog, "I think," you know, or saying anything like, you know, "in my opinion," those sorts of things. And so they might end up stating their opinions or conclusions in ways that make it very difficult to distinguish that from the facts that they are presenting. And if you're presenting facts, you know, let people know how, what the sources are from the fact, you know, whether you interviewed somebody, you know, put it in quote marks, create real quote marks, or if you're paraphrasing, say you're paraphrasing. Or if you are giving a statistic, cite or even better, link to the source for that statistic. And also, it's important, by the way, with statistics to mention years, not just names of publications, because sometimes a publication comes out year after year and people don't know what year you were drawing that data from. And just use language that distinguishes between the facts that you're stating and any conclusions you might be drawing or any speculation you might be making. And, you know, a lot of times journalists I speak to say, well, there should be no room for conclusions or speculation in journalism. Yeah, right. Like, that doesn't happen all the time. And like I said, like, newspapers aren't guilty of mixing this up as well. And I think you can use a lot of linguistic cues to differentiate between when you're editorializing and what is strictly reporting. And it really comes down to simple things like the language and phrases you use, how you structure your sentences. You'd be surprised how many news stories contain a fair amount of either editorializing or speculation or things along those lines. And there's editorializing even in deciding which facts you present as well. You know, it's like journalists talk about reporting, but then they talk about the story. And you know, sometimes those two concepts seem at odds because a story has to have a flow and a sense of momentum and some sort of resolution to it. Whereas reporting can just be a string of facts. I mean, you can do reporting, it's nothing but a fact sheet or a timeline or something like that. So I think journalists, they know in their gut they need to do good storytelling, but they always protest that, oh, no, but I don't editorialize in my news stories. It's like hell you don't. They know this, but they will oftentimes have difficulty admitting it, and I think that confuses people who are trying to report and share news, because they have a kind of skewed picture about what journalism is supposed to be, and they don't realize that it is okay to a certain extent, and that's a judgment call, but to a certain extent, do a little bit of providing some conclusions or assumptions or speculation, because otherwise you don't have a sense of a story without it. It's just a series of disjointed facts. So I think a lot of times citizen journalists, from what I've seen, bend over backwards to try to just view facts, and they get so obsessed with that the perfect becomes the enemy of the good. And it gets in the way of timeliness, too, where they can tell a story well, and if they're being clear about where they are coming, you know, departing from the facts and getting into a bit more analysis or speculation, as long as they're clear about that, and that's what comes down to the transparency thing we were discussing before, I think they're doing okay. And as long as, if they end up being wrong about anything, updating it immediately and correcting it in a way that's going to be visible right where the original story was.